Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
From baseball to football and some new rules that we might see. Some of these are kind of cool. Some are a little bit arcane and difficult to understand for somebody like me. But let's see what this game might look like if some of these come to pass. Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You find him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. Eric, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Congrats on the anniversary as well at the station. Very good stuff to see.
Much appreciated. Thank you. Although if they keep running those promos, I'm going to throw one up here. So we heard about this possible change, and I don't know anybody who doesn't like this. The one first and foremost, teams could choose to forego an onside kick. When they say that, I mean, they're not ruling out the fact that I guess they still could onside kick based on this rule. But instead, if they want to keep possession, they could attempt a 4th-and-15 play from their own 25-yard line to retain possession of the ball. Is there any downside to this that I'm missing?
Yeah, well, you know, that's funny because I have a coworker who hates it, and I haven't sort of drilled down on exactly why he hates it. That's probably going to be on my list of things to do today just to get the other side of the coin. But I kind of like it. I sometimes these bizarre rule changes that get proposed, you say, oh, come on, this isn't the football I grew up with, or this is, you know, too XFL-ish or whatever. You know, I know this is something the Alliance of American Football tried, and it was slightly different, if I recall. I think it was a 28-yard line, it was 4th-and-12 or something. But, you know, this is a more risky situation, and it's probably not going to be invoked all that often. You can only do it twice a game. I think you can only do it when trailing, if I'm not mistaken, as opposed to, you know, like if there was only 20 seconds left on the clock, kneel it down or whatever. So, I mean, it may not come into play that often, but when it does, think about the excitement it'll generate, assuming there are fans in the stands and all that. But, I mean, you know, it really is a bizarre situation that, yeah, it sort of changes the rules, and we never had this before. But I'm all for creative new ideas to allow teams to try to get back in the games.
What I like about it is it takes away the randomness and silliness of an onside kick. When you think about how we watch it play out, forget the actual percentages of recovery and actually look at how dumb it is, because it almost always is, first of all, a penalty because it didn't go far enough or somebody was kind of offsides. And then it's about trying to bounce it up in the air and guys run into each other. And it doesn't seem like an NFL game should be decided or be close to being decided by something that inherently random, where this actually gives both teams more control over the outcome of what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, look, there have been some exciting onside kicks that have had dramatic impacts on NFL games. It's not like we can argue against that, right? The Saints-Colts Super Bowl, obviously,
sure,
one of the more thrilling moments. And, you know, the Packers-Seahawks game, Brandon Bostic, you know, that's sort of become his scarlet letter, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, I can't argue that some onside kicks have produced some really dramatic moments, but think about the first time this is converted. I mean, I went back and looked. There just aren't that many 4th-and-15 attempts from any part of the field in the last 10 years of football. Like, I had to do it a couple times to look, but there really have only been a handful of occasions that that's come up, and it's usually been when a team's been down big. So, you know, it's a pretty good risk. Like, if you're down 5 points, you know, and figuring that if you give it up and you can only – you hold them to a field goal, like you don't get the conversion, you're still only down one score technically. So there's some really fascinating strategic elements come into play with this thing.
A lot of things that I wonder. First of all, it needs a cool name. Like, if you're going to brand this, you've got to call it something. It's got to be called, like, the panic button or the moonshot or the, you know, give it something to make it fun in that regard. And maybe we could brainstorm
that. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Something like that. But my worry is, especially now that we don't know how to call pass interference, and they tried to figure out last year how to call pass interference, of somebody even more, an effective play caller, recognizing a way to game the system a little bit and just try to get that flag to come out, because that's what you'd hate to see. You want it to be either that it's knocked away or it's intercepted or it's caught, and instead we're going to get into this morass of pass interference.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I actually forgot. I was texting with a coaching friend of mine. He's been in the NFL before. He's in college now. And I said, what do you think of this? And he said, my question is, will they swallow the whistle on PI, or will they call it more frequently? He said, as a coach, that's what I want to know. He said, I'd be experimenting with this in the preseason, assuming we have preseason, just to kind of see, are guys going to be more whistle happy, less whistle happy? Yeah, that's a fair question to ask. And maybe it depends on the officiating crew. Maybe it's, you know, like last year with the PI stuff that was reviewable, we saw pretty much across the board, they weren't overturning that thing unless you committed, you know, a homicide on the field. So that's, I guess, the next extension of it. If this thing is endorsed, is that how are officials going to be calling those types of play? Because, you know, you're throwing the football and you're probably throwing the football, you know, pretty far vertically. And that's going to create some really interesting situations with PI.
The other thing I think, too, is some of these mad scientist play callers could really have fun with it. And just the way teams devote a little bit of practice time to it, of just how creative they would get. And wondering, like, do you want to target, depending on matchup, obviously, would you rather have your number one receiver get that chance against maybe the other team's best corner? Or do you just take the college idea of they can't have enough defensive backs of quality if you keep putting more wideouts out there? So if you just go complete empty set, that eventually you're going to get a matchup against a bum and just try to find him. So there's some strategic aspects of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's obviously part of what offensive coordinators are trying to do anyway, right? Exploit the best matchups. And if it is your number one guy, great, go after it. You know, if it ends up being your number five receiver who only gets, you know, 8 or 10 offensive snaps a game, you might have a specific play that you really like, you know, run some clear outs and then get this guy underneath catching the ball, you know, 2 or 3 yards short of the line of scrimmage. They may not expect that. So yeah, there's certainly some avenues for creativity. And I think to your point before too, you know, it's not that onside kicks can't be fun or aren't interesting in some way, but I think people, especially in this era, with all the interesting quarterbacks we have and the various skills that they possess, they want to see guys throwing the football, trying to get a first down, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Football is a quarterback-driven game, not a kicker-driven game.
Talking with Eric Edholm on Sport Radio 670 The Score, here's the next rule that's interesting, that's significant. This was proposed by both the Ravens and the Chargers. It would add what is commonly referred to as a sky judge, adding a booth umpire as an eighth game official to the officiating crew. The teams proposed adding a senior technology advisor to the referee to assist the officiating crew. So what does this mean? We already have replay reviews, but a sky judge or a booth umpire would, I presume, would have more sweeping powers to just be there to see things?
Yeah, I think just another angle that I think would provide more context. You know, so many times we look at the sideline view, the end zone view, you know, the behind the quarterback view or whatever, and you know, it can kind of cobble together a picture of what's going on. I mean, again, coaches for years have said we need more cameras, more officials, more this and more that. And I think flat line, yeah, I do tend to agree with that. I think that, you know, the more resources you have to solve a problem, the better. But, you know, it can also get muddled a little bit too. So, yeah, it's obviously something that they're sort of borrowing from these other leagues that sprung up and had minimal success, but may have unearthed some really interesting, you know, football inventions, so to speak, and, you know, ways to kind of push the game forward that, I mean, this is how the NFL does it. Let's watch the other piece. Same thing with the COVID stuff, right? They're watching the other professional leagues, how they go about their business. They're going to steal all their best ideas. Nobody's going to claim plagiarism. They're going to do the same thing, I think, with the AAF and with the XFL. Look at how did those rules work? How did those implementations, you know, affect the game? Was it positive or negative? It seems like overwhelmingly they're at least open to those new ideas that other people tried out first.
Well, I want to make sure I have this right regarding the Sky Judge, that this isn't it's not replay, that this is somebody in real time who can, quote unquote, throw a flag. Obviously, yeah. You're just going to press a button and a light's going to go on. But this is someone, as if he's on the field, who just has the better view or multiple views and will be operating. And that call would be subject to its own review. But this would be a real time, see a penalty, call a penalty during the play.
Yeah, and I mean, are people going to be satisfied with that? Okay, Sky Judge came in and overruled everybody on this or whatever. I still have to read a little bit more about it to really fully understand exactly what their powers are and how it's going to affect the games and everything. So that's, you know, that's the kind of thing where it sounds really good, but maybe it gets to that situation and we say, you know, why was this one flagged and that one not? Or why was this one, you know, the play stopped for this? I mean, the stoppage and play factor, too. I mean, at some point, we want to watch a smooth product. We want to watch something where there aren't, you know, an additional 15 stoppages per game. Is that going to be a factor at all? Is that going to sully the product at all? I don't know. I mean, those are questions that we probably don't know until we actually get to the preseason and see it kind of happening in real time.
Yeah, because I just think from my vantage point of sitting on the couch, how many times I say holding,
flag.
Or you see, or right, or contact to the head, or yeah. It is, and you're like, well, how can he not see that? So you're right that it might just be when we start saying better. A better way of seeing things, that's really the balance, right? That we want a game that we can still watch while also getting it right. It may just be we don't know that we like enjoying a game that is imperfect, and it would be that we're not exactly certain. We ask for one thing, but we may not want what we're asking for.
It's so true. I mean, I think everybody's on the same page. You want as cleanly officiated a game as possible. You also don't want games lasting to, you know, beyond college length, where, you know, it sort of feels like these things last forever and the games are, you know, unending in some ways, or, you know, there are just so many interruptions in play and all that. I mean, striking that balance, I think, is going to be the crucial element. But, you know, it does feel like the fourth and 15 thing has gotten a little bit more support so far. I don't know, maybe I'm reading the tea leaves wrong on this, but it feels like there's a little bit more support for that than there has been universal support for the extra officials. I mean, the extra official interaction or whatever you want to call it, the extra people, the eyes on the field. So I don't know. I mean, it requires 24 votes. They got to get 75% majority. I mean, it's that requires quite a bit of convincing in those rooms, and now they're doing it digitally. So we'll see if that has any effect as well.
Yeah, I'm for it. We need that name. Like, what would you say? Convert or die. Fourth or die. I like it. I'm open to anything. Eric Edholm, appreciate the time. Continued good health. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Same for you, my friend. Thanks.
That is Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports NFL columnist. Earlier today on Mully and Haw, broadcaster Doug Glanville was talking about all the current issues facing the Cubs and Bears. And how he foresees some of this getting done and trying to speculate of when baseball is going to be back. And just talking about this bizarre situation the Cubs and other teams and all the players right now find themselves in. We'll bring that back for you. It's fascinating stuff. It comes your way next on The Score.
NFL football fans, let The Score hook you up while you're keeping safe at home as we air NFL Classics featuring some of the biggest games in NFL history.
Starting Monday night at 7, it doesn't get any bigger than Super Bowl I, Packers versus Chiefs. That's Monday night at 7
on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago Sports Station, a production of Westwood One Sports. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's in our basic agreement is to work in good faith, and it's something that I think we as players really we want that to be the case. We want to do this together, and we want to do it for the fans. We want to do it for the country, and we want to bring baseball back. That's our goal. So I hope and I pray that we can continue to work towards an agreement, and that we can do it in an ethical and fair way. Because you're right, what's happening right now in our game, it's not pretty. I don't think it's what the players, the owners, or the fans want right now. I think there's enough going on in the world that if we can work together and try to bring back something to the best of our ability, and really just to highlight what this game is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about sportsmanship. It's supposed to be about entertaining people across the country and across the world. So I think we owe it to everyone.
That's Ian Happ from his regular appearance on this show, Thursdays at 11 o'clock. That was his statesman-like presentation of the players' side of things, and he is involved as an associate rep for the Cubs. This segment is brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Fed up with companies selling your data? DuckDuckGo is on it. They help millions of people like you take back their privacy online. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers, all for free. DuckDuckGo Privacy Simplified. We have talked some baseball. We talked a little bit of football, and we're going to have some fun coming up in just a bit, the Midday Midway. I've got a great local news story, among other things, for you. And at 11, because it's Friday before a long weekend, it's Memorial Day weekend, you're going to be grilling meat, you're going to be cooking all kinds of animal proteins. Well, our Shane Reardon, who is our executive producer today with Jay Zawoski off, is a self-styled meat guru, and we're going to do Shane's Meat Live, SML, at 11. And we'll open the phones and we'll talk about grilling and cooking, and maybe you've stumbled upon some quarantine recipe that you just want to talk about or brag about, or if you have a question. If you say, oh my God, I got a brisket in the freezer and I want to make it, I don't know what to do, Shane can help you out. So we're going to make everybody hungry starting at 11 o'clock. Earlier today with Mully and Haw, Doug Glanville was on, and they talked about the current proximity to baseball's return.
I think we're getting closer. I mean, it's just more the planning has always been there. You know, you couldn't put an exact timetable on getting all the safety protocols or just getting all the information together to figure out when's the right time and when's the safe time. But because they've been looking into all these different scenarios from day one, they're now at least in a place where they're trying to act on it. And they recognize that anything can happen. And you saw the laundry list of, you know, whatever, 60, 70 plus pages of ways to try to make this happen. And when it's dependent on this many people, a lot of things can go wrong. So they know they're going to have to also be prepared for things not going as planned. But we're at the planning stages and the implementation stage where baseball is trying to get online very shortly. And that's just where they are. And they're going to do everything they can to get on the field. And, of course, as you mentioned, the economic issues or other issues that typically happen between the Players Association and MLB are going to be a hurdle. I don't see them, you know, destroying or blowing up the game because of it, but it could lead for a pretty nasty 2021.
So, Doug, given your experience as a former player for a decade in Major League Baseball, how are the players viewing this, and what is the most important thing that they need to either hear or see in either the health proposal or the financial proposal that should be coming in the next few days?
Well, there's no doubt that some middle ground, you know, that's going to be the key, because I know Major League Baseball sort of put it out there, a very thought-through proposal, And now when it hits the public domain, there's a strategic component to that, right? It's like, okay, it's out there now. If you disagree, it's kind of on you. So they recognize that that's, you know, typically the history of the negotiations between the two entities. They've always had these challenges. And the positive is that, you know, years have gone by. Really, if you look at someone's career like a Chase Utley, he basically played his entire career without work stoppage. That was unheard of. That was really unprecedented, because even in my career, 94, 95, there was always something. That was how ground was gained in the process between the two. So the fact that they've had effectively labor peace, other than a couple, you know, saber rattling in the newspapers and the dot-coms and all, you know, they generally have gotten along well enough to get things done. Now, that was under peacetime. So just imagine now where there's so much more urgency and the social commentary and the eyes that are on baseball to do this right, to not get stuck in the weeds over, you know, dollars and cents. So the player thing, you know, I've served on as a player rep in all my teams that I played for, plus I was on the executive subcommittee. And we were indoctrinated coming in as part of this union, this players association, that had to preserve the past and protect the future. You know, so yes, your snapshot in time is important, of course. You make money, you make a living, you play the game. But in the end, you're going to be gone and the river flows on. And what are you going to leave behind? Well, the protections that was built on strikes and frustration and labors and all these rules and Supreme Court rulings and Curt Flood, that was what you were supposed to protect to make sure going forward you have something. What's difficult now is that it's a moment where you really can't avoid thinking individually, because your circumstances are personal. You might be living, you know, with your grandparents, or you just had a baby. Now you're talking about existential, you know, safety, risk, survival, all these things that enter your mind. And we know that obviously all these essential workers have been doing this since day one to just, you know, get us food and the many other things. So there's a big hurdle there to get to unify a group of people that have these individual situations that are unlike anything we've ever experienced.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Doug. And you know, again, I think when we talk about labor issues, we keep hearing people say that there'd be irreparable damage to the game if they were to kind of shut down over something like this. And I don't know that it's fair of all of us to try to impose ourselves on that negotiation and try to act as if there is some patriotism involved in whether or not players play. I mean, I want it more than anyone, but I can't tell someone, given what you talked about, their family situation, you know, whether they have a young child, whether they have someone that has a underlying illness. I just don't feel comfortable kind of ordering people to do something. Even the so-called essential workers, I think it's got to be a decision that you make. And a lot of times it's made over economic reasons. If you don't have that, then it's hard to impose your will on someone else.
No, it's a fair point. And I, you know, you take someone like Sean Doolittle for the Nationals, you know, he spoke eloquently about it. And, you know, you're conflicted because you want to play, and you also recognize with a level of humility the importance of sports, right, and how it has this opportunity to sort of, you know, bring back something that we're all missing. And there is a significance to sports' role in society beyond sort of the X's and O's. But there are very real consequences when people are in these personal circumstances. And if you want to think of it almost like a playbook, you know, if I look back at the negotiations over the years, the Players Association needs to continue to focus on health and safety. And not just the protocols of it, but just understanding that you have the bandwidth to kind of make these decisions. I know Commissioner Manfred came out and said, like, well, you know, you don't have to play if you don't want to. Now, I don't know if that player gets paid, or I'm not sure of the circumstances yet, but, you know, they certainly are going to mandate it. But the challenge for the Players Association, therefore, is, well, if you have a guy on the 40-man roster that's single and doesn't have the same challenges or questions about family and safety, and it's like, it's just me, I'm from the Dominican Republic, I'm away from my family, whatever it is, then, you know, are you going to, like, have Mike Trout sit out and like, a fourth outfielder become the starting center fielder of the Angels? Like, you don't know. And these are very real possibilities, depending on, as you mentioned, these personal circumstances. So I think the Players Association would be wise to continue to focus on safety, focus on these question marks that will remain. And, you know, look, the economics, it may not play out beautifully for the Players Association from a historical standpoint, but if you just punt it to 2021 and you get back to the table and then try to go from there, that would be a much better received time to really kind of work out the economics and others.
You know, Doug, a lot of these things come down to messaging and how strong and clear a message is and how that sways public opinion. And I don't know if that is as important in this one as it has been in the past, but from a player's perspective, and you can certainly speak to this because you transitioned well and smoothly into the media role, that, and we're hearing why. But how complicated and challenging can it be for players to have a unified message? We heard from Blake Snell very kind of inelegantly and kind of clumsily, and him express himself. And unfortunately, that became sort of the player who was the loudest last week. And I don't know that you've heard as much of a unified message as you have from the owner's side. And I imagine it's because there's so many different players to represent, and it's so difficult to have that one unified message.
It's extremely difficult. Well, and just think about the history of this. And this was sort of my era coming in. So Don Fehr was you know, running the union executive director. And his strategy was not to battle in the press and battle in the media. And part of it was kind of a defeatist strategy. If you tried to go out there, first of all, many of the teams were owned by media outlets, and they just didn't have a chance. And he knew that, so he didn't try to battle that. But what he did was battle through the courts, the legal system, the arguments, and his number one thing was to always communicate to the players. And it was easier then, right? You didn't have social media everywhere, and you just said, okay, I'm going to – he'd stop at every single spring training location and give these full-blown hours and hours-long speeches and discussions around the issues. So and then the reps, our job was to make sure we kept everybody on the same page. So my only big incident in Philadelphia when I was repping the Phillies was Todd Pratt got upset, and it was understandable. And he said, you know, he went public with it and said, well, they don't care about the little guys, and you know, they only care about the big name players or something like that, right? So, but I was able to call him the next day and say, look, dude, you got to tone it down. We respect what you're saying. Just bring it in-house, and we have to have a unified front. And that was it. That was the extent. This is during a strike, near lockout, all these things. So now, no chance. And one thing you definitely have to note is this. The Houston Astros, you cannot underestimate what that did to the communication strategies and approaches and unification of the players, because that was the first time I ever saw players just blasting openly other players. And yes, they had huge transgressions. However, that all is that indoctrination around the union and saying, no, we're not going to call each other out publicly, we're going to keep it in-house, that was always the tradition. But now, you know, everybody has Twitter handles and Instagram, and like you said, Blake Snell, they can say whatever. So I don't know how they're going to pull that off. They're going to have to figure it out. But whether you have people talking about it openly is going to be tough. But the cat's out of the bag now. Players will call out other players and speak directly. And the union's got a lot more work to do to sort of bring it back in-house.
He's Doug Glanville. You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score, and we're talking about the hopeful for the return of baseball. You know, Doug, what will it look like when we, you know, if this proposed plan goes forward and we're talking about a universal DH, we're talking about limited travel, we're talking about playing kind of, I guess, in the Midwest League. I don't know what we're going to call it, but how will it work in terms of all, not of any of the, I'm talking about the baseball now. How will that kind of play out given the teams that we're talking about meeting each other here?
Well, I see it as a great opportunity in terms of innovation, and maybe there is a chance to not only, you know, do something cool and new, but also recapture some of the things that fans valued about the past. You know, I came in a time, you think about all the things that have like been eliminated almost by analytics, right? Stealing bases is greatly reduced, and hit and runs and all the shifts now, and there's a lot of things that have just changed the game, and that is, you know, it's going to evolve. Of course, but there could be elements that you say, well, I wish there was starting pitching that went nine. Now, that probably won't happen this year because of the shortened, whatever you want to call, spring training, I guess. But there's no doubt that they're looking to try to make sure it's efficient from a travel standpoint for safety purposes. You know, if you have 30 teams crisscrossing into Canada and all these and playing games in Iowa and Florida, you know, it's just going to be even more difficult, especially with families and a sort of an extended baseball family. So they're trying to keep it simple geographically, and you might see just a lot more, sort of close community baseball games in terms of geographics. So that makes sense. I know the idea of training in Arizona or Florida and just playing down there was one, but that was a lot of travel, so they're trying to figure it out. But this is what could change overnight. If something happens where a team, you know, gets quarantined or something, you know, I don't know how they're going to handle that, but there's no question they have to plan for it.
He's so smart. I always love hearing from Doug Glanville, just a very sensible and level-headed guy. As we continue, so, you know, we talked about it yesterday. It's funny, all these discussions about how are sports coming back and how are they going to agree to all this. And we still keep pushing to the back of our heads of the should factor of should we be pushing any of this back? Should we want this? Is it okay for us as sports fans to keep wanting this back when there could be any number of hundreds or thousands of people endangered by the relaxation of some of these restrictions? It is it's an ongoing internal conflict, I think, that I have as a citizen and sports fan that probably isn't going to abate anytime soon. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I've got all kinds of stuff here. We got a great local news story, and I'm going to sort of ask the question, where do you think this happened? There's some new research on some of the Twitter conversations that we're having with people that probably aren't people. And I've got another magnet fishing story. And you know how these magnet fishing stories go. What is it usually? Think about what it almost always is. If I have a story about magnet fishing that has made its way into the news, what is on the other end of the magnet? It is not that. Also, it's not just certain states that have people acting in certain ways. This was some very close to home, a couple of news stories that the fact that they were juxtaposed, I just found really interesting. That means it must be the Midday Midway, and it's coming up next. I'm Dan Bernstein. You have the score.
This is 670 The Score, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station, period. Thanks for keeping us on top, Chicago. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
We have reached the Midday Midway on this TGIF show on Sports Radio 670. We started out by talking about the Cubs and their business and the pay cuts and what's real and what's not, and trying to figure out how a team as apparently reliant on game day revenue as they are is going to continue to function similarly going forward, as long as it's going to take, apparently, for us to get some sense of public gathering normalcy to return, because the Cubs are more invested. Their business is more invested in the idea of the crush of people and the public gathering than some other MLB businesses are. Patrick Mooney of The Athletic joined us to talk about that. Then we talked about the potential labor negotiation with labor law expert Eugene Friedman, NFL rules discussion with Eric Enholm, always fun. And then you heard from Doug Glanville from the Mully and Haw Show earlier today. I've never read anything from this publication before, but I get a kick out of it because of these two stories back to back, and just because of sort of the way it's written. And this is from the Forest Park Review. It's just a, you know, online local newspaper here from Forest Park, Illinois, just west of the city. A man declaring he was Jesus pulled a knife on a Dollar Tree employee after trying to steal a toothbrush. Police picked up the offender as he was walking eastbound on Roosevelt toward Planet Fitness. The knife used in the assault wasn't on his person, but police recovered it, a kitchen knife, a little while later on the ground. According to the employee, the suspect selected a toothbrush, and attempted to leave the store without paying. When the employee approached the suspect, he threw the toothbrush at the employee and left yelling racial slurs. The employee followed the suspect outside, where the offender pulled out a knife and held it out in a threatening manner. The suspect denied stealing anything, and he also denied pulling out a knife. He says he carries a knife for protection because terrorists all over the world are after him. Throughout the arrest, according to the police report, he declared that he was Jesus Christ. So why would terrorists be after him? And he does say he carries a knife for protection, but he denied pulling out a knife. So there's that story. And then the very next headline is a three-word headline, and all it says is glitter penises ejected. So I think, I'll read on. I want to hear about the ejection of glitter penises and members of glitter penises, so to speak. Police were called to a Madison Street business when a business owner received a suspicious package in the mail. The package, which she had not ordered, contained a white tubular object with a spring inside. The owner was concerned the object might be harmful. The reporting officer inspected the package and object. Due to my training, experience, and familiarity with that type of package, I was able to identify the package as a glitter bomb, wrote the officer in the police report. In order to confirm the package was in fact a glitter bomb, I opened the package in a safe direction. The officer reported that, quote, the package ejected several pieces of multicolored glitter shaped as penises, end quote. Nobody was harmed in the incident. I present that without comment. All right, let's play this game as we bring you. I'll just tell you that this is local station NBC2. And I'm not going to tell you where, but let's play Guess the State.
You've probably seen this video by now. If you thought this guy made a stupid move by diving into the giant fish tank at the Bass Pro Shops in Lee County, well, check out what he did now. Daniel Armendariz posted this video on Facebook, taunting deputies and saying, quote, I'll turn myself in when I'm ready. We have blurred out a few of his fingers as well. Questionable choices aside, he is wanted by Crime Stoppers, and you can make some cash if you know where he is. Here's NBC2's Alex Howard.
In the past week since the video went viral on social media, the man featured in it has been hiding from deputies. Now he's posted to Facebook, taunting both them and Bass Pro. With beer bottle in hand, this video showing an obscene gesture to a Bass Pro shirt was posted yesterday afternoon to Facebook.
Just because it's going to get worse for him, he should just come forward and turn himself in, I think.
Along with this profanity-laced confession by Armendariz, who admits to making this dive two Sundays ago at Bass Pro.
I think it's kind of ridiculous that they're seriously giving like a reward, $3,000, for someone who jumped in a tank, but I mean, why is he still on the run?
Shortly after this video got thousands of views, the Lee County Sheriff's Office issued an arrest warrant for him, along with a $3,000 reward for info on where he is. But on Monday, a defiant Armendariz called the damages done to the tank and his pending felony charge BS.
Social media has taken it to the point where people just do it for like likes and views and popularity.
A taunt that was so bold, he told deputies he'd turn himself in when he was ready.
He just kind of looks more ridiculous than he really is. You know, even though he jumped in the tank, it's more ridiculous to taunt the police.
And we reached out to Crime Stoppers, who declined to comment on the video, only saying that the $3,000 reward still stands and the investigation is ongoing. In Lee County, Alex Howard, NBC2.
That would be Lee County, Florida. That's the NBC affiliate in the Fort Myers, Naples region there. And if you actually read this guy's Facebook taunt, I'm tired of you looking for me like I'm some fugitive over a little tank dive. Who doesn't want to dive in that tank? Well, I don't. This was the Bass tank at Bass Pro Shops, and he literally dove in it. What the hell are you doing?
And actually, if you were to dive in a tank, I don't know if every Bass Pro Shop is like this, but at least the last time I was in one, it's the one off of 94 in Indiana. It was on our way to Southwest Michigan. And I remember stopping, and we went in there, and they had they had the regular largemouth bass tank with these giant and sort of old and sad kind of gray looking bass just kind of lolling around. And then they had a river tank. I don't know if they still do. It had smallmouth and yellow perch in it. And that was kind of neat because that had a current. There's a current that's running through it. And if you dive into that tank, and they obviously wouldn't have that in Florida because they don't have smallmouth bass and yellow perch there. Maybe yellow perch, certainly not smallmouth bass. But now there you can kind of swim against the current and kind of do a whole bit, and instead of just floating in the tank. But he makes it sound like this is something that people are just that generally want to do. Kind of not really. This is from NPR. Nearly half of Twitter accounts spreading messages about the coronavirus pandemic are likely bots, according to Carnegie Mellon University. Researchers culled through more than 200 million tweets discussing the virus since January and found that 45% were sent by accounts where their markers flag them for behaving more like computerized robots than human beings. It's too early to say conclusively which individuals or groups are behind the bot accounts. Gee, yeah, I wonder why. But researchers said the tweets appeared aimed at sowing division in America. They know that it looks like it's a propaganda machine, and it matches the Russian and Chinese playbooks. But the professor of computer science at Carnegie Mellon University, Kathleen Carley, says it would take a tremendous amount of resources to substantiate that. Researchers identified more than 100 false narratives about COVID-19 that are proliferating on Twitter by accounts controlled by bots. These would be conspiracy theories about hospitals being filled with mannequins, tweets that connect the spread of the coronavirus to 5G wireless towers, notions that are patently untrue. And they're concerned because these internet ideas have caused real-world harm. In England, dozens of wireless towers have been set on fire, and acts officials believe have been fueled by false conspiracy theories. So it's always good advice to remember that when in doubt, just mute the account, because arguing with a robot, arguing with some Russian troll farm, somebody sitting in St. Petersburg clicking things at you by algorithm, not worth anybody's time, certainly not worth yours. Magnet fishing is all the rage, and if there is magnet fishing in the news, chances are it's a bomb, because this has been popular in England for some time. There is a lot of unexploded World War II ordnance still in and around London, and people tend to find these things that they think could still blow up. And here, when people are magnet fishing, the story is usually a grenade. Now, we did one last week that involved those really cool Hindu inscripted cubes that are a way of invoking the protective powers of a certain Hindu god. I don't know if we're ever going to top that, but I bring you via ABC4 News in Charleston County, South Carolina, to John's Island, where 6-year-old Knox Brewer, how is he not an all-rookie major league player? That is such a modern baseball name. Number 33, Knox Brewer. He took up magnet fishing a few weeks ago after watching a video on YouTube. So he's standing on a dock, and he drops the magnet. He says, magnet fishing is awesome. My favorite part about doing this is when we get something up, how big or small it is. And his parents thought it'd be a healthy hobby, an educational and rewarding experience to help pass the time. And he learned about which rocks are magnetic and which aren't. Well, he found something in the bottom of Whitney Lake. It was heavy. It was stuck in the mud. But with the help of a nearby stranger, they fished it out, and it was a safe, a locked metal safe. And they pried it open, and they found jewelry and credit cards and a checkbook. So
They called the authorities, they got them involved, and as it turned out, the safe belonged to a neighbor, a woman they tracked down just across the street. She said the safe was stolen from her home 8 years ago. She got some missing charm bracelet pieces that were still left in there. She said all the expensive stuff was gone, but she got closure, and she got some of her pieces back. So I know what you're asking. You're saying, is this enough? Is this intrigue and all these stories in the Midday Midway enough to make me want to take up magnet fishing? And the answer is no. I'm going to stick with actual fishing, but I am intrigued by this. And I think that there are probably all kinds of stories about people finding valuables. Like, I always see, like, the old person on the beach with the sifter and the metal detector and the little earpieces. And I can see how that would be fun. But I also think it would be sad if you find lost jewelry items and things that, you know, that people, you'll never be able to reunite everybody. And that would be my problem. It's like everything's got a story connected to it. And then I'd start probably to feel guilty about it. But I will continue to bring, if there are magnet fishing stories, you will hear them on this segment. That I promise. And that is the Midday Midway. And now it is time for Friday Fun. What did I make last night? I made a steak two nights ago, a bone-in ribeye with a lot of that end cap on there. I forget what they call the chain or the what's it called? My son always corrects me on this one.
It's the rib cap.
Rib cap, thank you. That I look for my ribeyes. I want more rib cap than rib meat because
that's the portion of the ribeye that is judged at competitions. That's exactly what you want. You don't want the eye.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah, the eye is different. Yeah, different texture, higher fat content. But but last night I did Cheesy Peasy Burger Mac, which is one of my absolute favorite things. I had two big Omaha Steaks burgers, and I crumbled them up, and I made a box of Kraft mac and cheese. I had a handful of frozen peas, and then instead of adding margarine with the cheese sauce, you use the rendered fat from the browned beef, and you make a huge... Oh, God, dude. Trust me, it's like a huge bowl of cheeseburger, and you get a little bit of vegetably brightness and texture from the frozen peas that thaw right in there with everything. The whole thing. It was like 3/4 of a pound of meat and the whole box, and oh man, is it good. That's living. It's
like a poor man shepherd's pie. Throw those peas.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's that's one way of putting it, but it's also like what Hamburger Helper used to be when you know, if mom was busy and she wanted to do that, but it's so much better, and there's nothing like a giant bowl of Cheesy Peasy Burger Mac. But I've got some Blade pork chops that I'm going to make, which is my favorite pork chop cut. I like it better than the rib chop for similar reasons that just described regarding the rib cap. A Blade chop has got more of that fatty, really yummy meat. So let's talk meat. Let's do this. Shane Reardon is here. That's the other voice you hear. We're going to do Shane's Meat Live. You can call in, whether it's a question about grilling, about cooking meat, about cast iron, whatever you're going to do at any point in the next 3 days. We're going to have some good weather. I think Sunday, Monday might get a little sketchy. You might want to do some stuff inside. But whatever you got, whether it's sausages, beef, pork, poultry, maybe you have a great recipe you just want to share or a great cooking idea you want to share, let's do it. 312-644-6767. Shane's Meat Live is coming up on The Score.
When you think Chicago sports, think Mully and Hall. Chicago's most listened to sports morning show, hands down. They cover all of Chicago's teams, from the daily wins and losses to the most historic moments in Chicago sports. Trust Mully and Hall to start your day. Mornings 5 to 9, only on Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.